So good evening, everyone. Tonight will be the final segment on Al HaNisim, as we will next Tuesday already be celebrating Hanukkah. Okay, so we are basically, we'll call it in the middle, where we read. We handed over the mighty in the hands of the weak, for Rabbim be'ad mi'atim, the many in the hands of the few, t'mayim be'ad tahorim, the impure in the hands of the pure, u'risham be'ad tzadikim, the wicked in the hands of the tzadikim, v'zeidim be'ad oiskei sarasecha, and zeidim, which the Arsko translates as wanton, in the hands of those who are diligent students of your Torah. Oskei Sarasecha, we can translate in a literal sense as those who are involved in your Torah, which is the wording that's used for studying Torah. And the way the Artscroll translates is into the hands of diligent students of your Torah. So we're going to focus now on this section. What exactly, you know, we can understand the other contrasts, mighty and weak, many and few, pure and impure, righteous and wicked. What exactly is this contrast, and even the meaning of Zaydim Wantan in the hands of those who studied your Torah? So Rabbi Friedlander in Sipsa Chaim explains that we find in different verses that the word Zayd, which actually is related to probably the word Zadon, which means intentional, but we also find the word Zayd referring to a person who is Zayd as someone who is also involved in Leitzonis, in mockery. So, for instance, one of the psukim that he brings is the pasuk that says, Zayd yoher let shmoy, or Zaydim halitzuni ad ma'oid, the Zaydim mocked me very much. So, we have something that we call letzonis, which we, in Yiddish, for letzonis is joking, but letzonis, in its literal term, means to mock, to scoff at. It really means to tear down something from its value, something that's held at a certain stature, and you tear it down by mocking it, by making fun of it, whether it be a person, whether it be a concept, is called leitzonis. So the word zayd is used together with letz, with a person who's a scoffer, and therefore we can say here that zaydim refers to the Greeks as leitzonim, as scoffers. The word zayd, which translates in the article as wanton, which I think kind of means just wild. I'm not sure what wanton means exactly. But the way that Friedland is translating it, using the word zayd and seeing in verses how it's used together with letzonis, with scoffing, with mockery, is that this word zaydim is referring to the Greeks as those who made letzonis. They made mockery, and those who made mockery were given over into the hands of those who diligently studied Torah. What's the connection? So Rabbi Friedler makes the connection like this. First of all, he quotes a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos to understand, you know, when we talk about letzonis, an example of letzonis. You know, we think about letzonis as you make fun of a person. But letzonis also can mean when you don't value something as much as you should. So the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Shnayim sheyoshvin, you have two people that are sitting, ve'ein b'neihem divrei Torah, and words of Torah are not passed between them. Hareza Moshav Leitzim. This is a Moshav, an encounter of Leitzim, of scoffers. Okay, now the only thing it says there is that they weren't, the words of Torah didn't pass between them. It doesn't say anything around making fun of things. It just says they're sitting there and there's no words of Torah between them. So they're sitting there talking politics, talking sports, whatever they're talking. It doesn't, but where do you see the Leitzonis here? Why are we calling it a Moshav Leitzim? Why are we calling it an encounter of scoffers? Who's scoffing anything here? And Rabbeinu Yonah in his commentary to Avos explains that the reason why we're calling these people scoffers is because if a person would really value Torah study, then he would never allow free time to pass without utilizing it for that. Here you are sitting with someone, you have a chance to speak words of Torah, and you don't speak words of Torah, that has to be that you do not value Torah study properly, that you are not giving it its proper value. That can only be the only reason why you are not using this opportunity to share words of Torah. you are, in the sense, shaming or debasing or disgracing Torah, because if you don't use the Taiva Torah study, then that shows that you don't value it enough. That's why it's called a Moshev Leitzim, because you're not doing any, you're not making fun of anything, you're not even saying anything wrong. But here it is, you're wasting the valuable time. You're wasting the valuable opportunity to study Torah, but you don't use it. That's Latzonus. That means that you don't value properly that which should be valued. How does this relate to the Greeks? So Rabbi Friedlander explains, it relates to the Greeks in the following way. Now, we had discussed before that we know that Greece were very into studying and wisdom. They had a very structured society based on wisdom and philosophy and ethics. And the question is, so what do they have against Yiddishkeit? What do they have against the Jews who had a similar system? And one way we explained it was, is because the Greek belief in wisdom and philosophy and anything is that the ultimate thing that determines wisdom is human intellect. Only that which human intellect can perceive and understand has any kind of value. And to go beyond what you understand is silly, has no value. It has no value. Now, there was something also specific to Torah study that the Greeks mocked, or we can say they mocked. And that is that we know that a person, the mitzvah of Torah study is to study. It's called amal b'Torah, to toil in Torah. That means if you open up something in Torah and you study it, and you try to understand it, and at the end, you couldn't understand it. You know, I mean, you know, you gave it a shot, you couldn't understand it. To be at the end of the day, you opened up a Gemara, you tried figuring it out, you couldn't figure it out, and you close the Gemara and you say to yourself, what a waste. Chas v'shalom, what do you mean, what a waste? If you put the effort into studying, right, then you get the full-fledged mitzvah of Torah study, just like the person who understood the Gemara. Now, of course, we try to learn to understand and to retain. But at the end of the day, the actual obligation of the mitzvah of Torah is the studying. Even if you wouldn't understand it. Which means, even if there's no result, so to speak, there's no product that comes out of what you've done, you still have the mitzvah of Torah, studying Torah. That's what Torah study is about. It's about the effort in studying Torah. That's the mitzvah. That's everybody's mitzvah.
Who makes this conclusion?
That's a fact. That's a fact. Amal b'Torah means, this is something that is in writings all over, that Amal b'Torah means la'asok b'Torah, to be involved in learning, means the mitzvah is the learning. That's the mitzvah. Of course, you learn to know, and you want to know, you want to retain. That's something you should strive for. But the mitzvah is, like it says, that's what we say every morning. The mitzvah is, asher kedushanu b'mitzvah yisav etzivanu, la'aseik b'divrei seirah, to be involved, which means the mitzvah is be involved. Also, we know, for instance, this is a very common thing. You know, when people, let's say, study the section of the Talmud called Kachim. Kachim is the section that deals with sacrifices. So many people say, what's the point? There's no Beis HaMikdash, it has no practical ramification. Why are you studying it? That's a very common thing that people wonder. Because the answer is, I don't necessarily, the mitzvah of studying Torah has nothing to do, I shouldn't say nothing. Of course, we want it to lead into practical application. But the mitzvah itself is not dependent on that. The mitzvah itself is to study Torah. It is to study Torah. Now, you can talk about what should I be studying first, what should I be studying second, you know, how much time to put into this, how much time to put into that. But at the end of the day, if it's appropriate, and it's always appropriate, to study a section that may not have practical ramifications, you have studied Torah just like anything else. Because the essence of the mitzvah of studying Torah is to study. Not to waste your time, but to study. You know, to go and open up something necessarily that you have no idea what's going on, that may be a different story, even though there are those who say that also counts as studying Torah. And there could be different levels of studying Torah, how well to study Torah. But at the end of the day, the essential mitzvah is to put in the effort. That is the essential mitzvah, and that is what you get your main reward. That's the main fulfillment of the Torah. That was, the Greeks couldn't accept. That was ridiculous in their eyes. That was ridiculous. just to go in and study for the sake of studying without any ramification? You know, when you philosophize, right? Philosophy is supposed to bring you to some kind of conclusion about something.
There's no conclusion.
But whatever it is, but there's some kind of a conclusion in the sense that you go ahead and you have a way that you'll live your life based on it. You'll have a way of how it's someone else that's going to determine your life or other people's life. If there's some kind of ramification that comes out of it. Okay. However, but an idea of Asik in Torah, which means that you get the full mitzvah just for studying, even if there's no result or ramification that comes from it, that was unacceptable to them. And that is why they're called Zaydim. That's the scoffing, because when they understood that the Jews considered their wisdom a wisdom just for the sake of studying it, just for the sake of being involved in the study, that was worthless to them. That was why how they were scoffing and devaluing what the study of Torah is about.
That's the first brucha in the davening in the morning.
Right, exactly.
My friend from Beit Sha'an, Rabbi Shushan, when I asked him why he's studying Kedushin.
Kachmir. So the answer is?
He's preparing.
Right. The Chafetz Chaim said the same thing. But you don't have to go that far. I'm saying the Chafetz Chaim said that too. That you studied Kachmir to get ready for Mashiach. Okay. But yes, you could call that somewhat practical. Yes, you could. But at the same time, but there's an answer that says that. And Taharis, does he study Taharis?
I'm sure he
does. Getting ready for Mashiach then too. Whatever it is, at the end of the day, we know there are things.
Someday you'll meet him.
We know that there are things that we study, right, because they are Torah. That's the story. They are Torah.
Okay. It's not
right. Good point. We're not farmers, right?
Idea.
It has no practical implications for us. Now don't be so sure. Sometimes it does.
All right.
Sometimes it does. You know, if somebody has a vineyard in his backyard, which you know somebody in our shul has that in his yard, right? You never know. It could be relevant. But a lot of it, you're right, isn't relevant. But at the end, it's Torah. It's Torah. And the mitzvah of Torah, the essence of Torah is to study, to be involved. Yes, you should be involved to understand, to try to understand. You hope to understand. Your goal is to understand. But whether you got the understanding or not, whether you produce something or not, has no relevance to the fulfillment of the mitzvah. There's a famous thought from the Chafetz Chaim where we actually say this when we make a siyum. There's a sentence we say, Ono ameilim veheim ameilim. This is really part of the tefillah of Nechunya ben Akana in Brachas. But it says, Ono ameilim, and we take it off from there, this line. Ono ameilim veheim ameilim. We toil and they toil. Ono ameilim mekablim schar. We toil and receive reward. Veheim ameilim, they toil, veheim mekablim schar. They don't receive reward. Who toils doesn't receive reward? Everybody toils to receive reward. You work to get paid, don't you? So what does it mean? They work and don't get paid. If whatever they're doing, they get paid. Hopefully, you know. So the way the Chafetz Chaim explained is because the word is anu amelim. We toil and they toil. Now again, you know, nowadays you can charge for labor, okay? But if you're supposed to produce something, right? You're supposed to produce an airplane, right? And it's faulty. Are you going to get paid for the airplane? No. Even if you tried, right? Even if you tried and you tried to produce something and at the end of the day you did your best, you honestly did your best, but at the end of the day you didn't produce it right. I tried. What are they going to say to you? Nice try. But that's, you know, you're like, nice try, but you're not going to get paid. You're not going to get paid. That's what it means. They toil and don't get paid. There is going to be by them a certain level where they will toil, honestly, sincerely toil, and they still won't get paid for it because they didn't produce. We, on the other hand, anu amel makam schar means that we get the schar. We can be amel, we can toil. We may at the end not be able to produce because we couldn't understand or figure it out, but we will still get schar for it because that's the mitzvah of Torah, for the toil, for the involvement. And that was something that the Greeks could not accept. So v'zeidim yad oiskei teirasecha. The zeidim, the scoffers, in the hands of those who were oiskei teirasecha, students of your Torah. That means, according to this, I mean, that's what it means. The Makabim, the Chashmonoim, they were Talmidei Chachamim. right? They were people who diligently studied Torah. They were the people who understood the essence of Torah. And when the Greeks, who were mocking the essence of Torah study, were defeated, they were defeated by whom? Those who were involved in the study of Torah. Those people that they mocked, those were the people that defeated them. And that, and therefore, the Yeshua, the salvation that came about on Hanukkah, was one that, you know, in essence, it was a salvation from the sense that they couldn't persecute us anymore, but it was also a salvation from misconceptions, right? They're trying to say that's not, that wisdom doesn't work this way. Wisdom has to have a product. There has to be something produced from it. And that was one of the ideas that tried to spread to the Jewish people also. That misconception, that corrupt conception, that false conception, that's what we were freed from also. Okay, Arkady, what's the matter?
No, but if all of your ideas is studying not understanding, but...
No, you try to understand.
No, but try...
But if at the end of the day you didn't get it...
No, but there's also different 100 mitzvahs, how to know? If you don't read...
Sure, of course. So first of all, somebody else can tell you.
I believe it's studying Torah, it's only not only one way to learn something.
I'm not sure what you mean.
If I have class, it's studying Torah or not?
Yeah.
It means if somebody told you...
Here, let me give you an example. Let me give you an example to help you, right? Let's say you opened up a book, right, about the laws of Shabbos. You try to figure it out. Didn't go. Then somebody went and taught it to you. Somebody taught it to you. So wait a minute. So when the person taught it to you, right, that was Torah study, right, that you were able to now understand. The first time around was Torah study, even though you weren't able to understand it. And both are equal in their mitzvah. Both are equal in your mitzvah. You know, if you try to put on tefillin, right, and it didn't work for some reason, you're not going to get the mitzvah of tefillin. If you tried to build a sukkah, right, and it didn't happen, you don't get the mitzvah. But if you open up something from Torah and you give it your best shot and you didn't understand it, you still get the mitzvah because you were involved in Torah study.
But this is more important. If you close a book, Torah, and don't understand the next step, not to... to do something else, not to go and to figure out.
Definitely. But the time that you couldn't figure it out was not a waste. And not just a waste because, oh, it's a nice try. You fulfilled the mitzvah of Torah study as much as the guy next to you who understood it.
Not everyone's going to get the lesson.
That's true.
You're going to get the lesson better than me.
Right.
He's going to get it.
Correct. Oh. But you're right. If you don't understand, don't say, all right, I don't got to do anything anymore. You try to get somebody to help you 100%.
Because in this case, I don't understand this one. When in the next, Gemara, I don't understand.
You know, if you don't have a choice, you may have to do that. You know, if you don't have a choice, you do that. But you're right. You don't just go ahead and keep doing things without understanding, right? You want to learn. You want to be able to understand what you learn so that you could be able to, in the very least, practice what you learn. If you don't understand it, you're not able to practice. But even the study that you did without understanding is considered full-fledged, 100% mitzvah of studying Torah.
But if I forgot, I did not understand this part, and tomorrow I read again and again and again. This is five times the same thing. This is five
times that you tried it again and again and again?
Yes, for example.
Okay.
This is the same thing if I read for five times different things with no understanding. No, I did not understand.
You tried it again.
Try again.
Right.
This five times.
Right.
Finally, I understood.
Good.
But another one, you can give up and take another part. What is better? To stay until you understood?
Yeah. Definitely. No. Work on it till you understand
but
it.
But this is five times. This five times you perform.
Yep.
Studying
yes.
Torah, even the same thing.
Yes. Yes. As long as that was the appropriate thing to do, yes.
No, because this is sometimes difficult.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Anything you cannot tell is not clear understand.
Right, right. Okay. So that is the meaning behind this line of Zayin about Iskei Sarasecha. Okay, let's continue now. Back inside. Ulecha Asiyis Hashem Gadol V'Kadosh Ba'Olamecha. And for you, you perform, and for you, you made a great and holy name in your world. And for your nation Israel, you performed a great salvation, a redemption, like this day. So in these two lines, we talk about what was accomplished here with the miracle of the war. You sanctified your name and you saved your people. So as Rav Friedlander points out, the first thing that we talk about, what is the main thing? What's the first thing? What's the most important thing that comes out of this miracle? So we would say, oh, we were saved. No. The first thing is that Hashem's name was sanctified. That's the first thing. The first thing is that Hashem's name was sanctified. The second thing is that we were saved. And when we talk about the fact that Hashem's name was sanctified, so I think it's worthwhile to see how Rav Friedlander lays this out. So he says, Ki al yedei kein ro esmalas ha-tayruk du-shasa, v'esmalasamik du-shasam shal am Yisrael, l'umas ha-tume shal ha-chachma anushish shal Yavan. The first thing is that, as we know, what the battle of Yavan against the Jewish people was a battle against Torah, religious, against mitzvahs. It was a religious battle. And when you see the miracle and the victory of the Jewish people over the Greeks, then that means you see the greatness of Torah and mitzvahs over what they believed in, right? That's one level, right? If at one point of time, as he points out, for 52 years, they persecuted us for our religion and against our religion. At that point of time, you know, you're looking around and you're seeing that we can't do our religion and the Greek religion is in full force and stronger, right? That gives an impression that, you know, that kind of lessens the greatness of Torah. But now when it comes out that those who believe in Torah had a miracle performed for them and defeated the Greeks, that brings back the importance and greatness of Torah in our eyes. It also brings out the fact that, again, for 52 years, the Jewish people who were trying to serve God were persecuted for 52 years. Then again, what does that mean? That means, like, where's God? Why is he allowing this to happen? Where is he if he's allowing those who are devoted to him to be able to be persecuted? How can it be that those that are fighting a war against God are being able to be victorious and to be on top and to be in control? During that period of time, Hashem's honor is lowered and debased. So now when it comes out that there is a miracle, so Hashem's name becomes great again. And it's understand that it's his world. He had his reasons why until now he allowed it to happen. But now, after he performs the miracle and saves the Jewish people, it's clear that he is running the show. And therefore, that's what we say when we say, you made for yourself a great and holy name in your world. Right? Your name is again great and holy in your world. It's recognized that the world is yours. And that is all part of, that's our main focus of the victory of the war, of the salvation of the Jewish people. The first thing is that Hashem's name was made great and holy in the sense that, again, we see that he is in control of the world and that the service to him is the most important thing. The second thing is, we say, and for your nation Israel, you made a great salvation and redemption like this day. Now, these words, like this day, the commentary of Etz Yosef, which is a commentary, which is one of the commentaries on the Siddur, is he explains that the words Kayom Hazeh have to be understood that once Hashem brought salvation and salvation of Jewish people on Hanukkah, Hanukkah is a time of salvation for the Jewish people for all generations. It's once this time Hashem basically allowed the energy of his salvation to enter the world on Hanukkah, every Hanukkah, the potential for salvation for the Jewish people comes into the world. When we celebrate Hanukkah, we are bringing down the potential salvation for the Jewish people. And at some point, you know, that will come into fruition at whatever point of time Hashem wants it to come out. But we have the power to bring down salvation for the Jewish people every Hanukkah, because that's what's the time of. So when we utilize Hanukkah properly, we bring down that potential in a greater level according to how we celebrate Hanukkah. So that's what it means. You made a salvation, a redemption like this day, right? Which means to this day, the Teshuah, the salvation of the Jewish people, is taking place. It happened to the first time, and it's happening as this day. It happened. It keeps on happening. Okay. Now let's continue inside. And afterwards, your children came to your holy house, and they cleansed your sanctuary, your sanctuary, and they purified your base hamikdash, and they lit candles in the court, in your holy courtyard. Now, so what are we doing here? Now we're saying that what happened after the Teshuah, what happened after that? After that, what did the victorious Hashmonaim do? They didn't have a victory celebration, didn't have a parade. What did they do after the salvation? They went straight to work in getting the Beis HaMikdash back into shape, because the Beis HaMikdash had been ruined and contaminated. They put statues and idols into it. They sacrificed to these pagan gods in the Beis HaMikdash with unkosher animals, and the place was contaminated, impure, and a mess. And the Mizbeach was destroyed. There was lots of things they had to do. They had to go ahead and remove the statues. They had to go ahead and make a new menorah, make a new Mizbeach. There's a lot of things they had to do because of how they contaminated it and made it impure. But that's what they set off to do. When we're praising Hashem for the miracle of the Yeshua, we mention that, and we mention for ourselves. And what did those victorious do immediately upon that? They went straight to the Beis HaMikdash, because that was the goal. That was the whole purpose. The Kavu Shmoneh Yemei Chanukah Elu, and they established these 8 days of Chanukah, Lohodeisu LaHalel, to give thanks and to praise L'Shemach HaGadol, your great name. Okay? So we mention here that they lit candles, B'chatzreis Kachacha, in your holy courtyard. Now, there's no mention, as we've mentioned previously, no mention of the miracle of the menorah, right? It only says they lit the menorah. That's it. It could be an allusion to it, but it's not mentioned straight out, because that's not the focus. The focus of Al HaNisim is the miracle of the war and what resulted from that, which is taking back the Beis HaMikdash, which is what they did. They cleansed it, they purified it, and they began the service as soon as they could, which was going to be the menorah. And then it says, "V'kavu shmenes mayachanuka elu," and eventually they establish these 8 days of Hanukkah, lohoydais ulahalel, to give thanks and praise.
Another year.
Correct, as Gemara says. Lohoydais, to give thanks, means to give thanks in Al Hanisim, ulahalel, and to give praise by saying, hallel. Now we have here, it's very interesting, this word lohodos, right, which we say for giving thanks. So, as we say in Hebrew, right? If you want to say thank you, what do you say? Toda, right? That's the word for giving thanks. But there's another word. The word lahodos actually has another meaning to it. The word lahodos actually means to admit, to acknowledge, from the word, like, similar to vidui and similar to yedia. Lahodos means to declare your realization.
To make known.
To realize it. In order to give thanks, right, you have to acknowledge and realize something was done for you. Very often, a person, when somebody does a favor for them, because they don't want to feel indebted and they don't want to give thanks, so they kind of try to ignore what was done for them. That could happen between people and have between man and God. Right? If you don't want to feel indebted to anything. A person wants to feel independent. Now, if you recognize the favors that were done for you, there's a natural feeling of being indebted. If you ignore it, then you don't feel it. So lahodos has two connotations. Lahodos means to admit, to acknowledge that you have received this kindness and this gift from Hashem. And then what do? Once you acknowledge it, then you give thanks because you've acknowledged it. And the more you acknowledge it and the more you realize it, the greater your thanks will be. And once you realize and you acknowledge what you receive from Hashem, then you will say Hallel in the way that you should. So we say the word Lahoidais Ulahallel. We mention Hodah before Hallel is because we want to first mention giving thanks, the word for giving thanks, because that's the word for acknowledging also. And the first thing that you have to do is you have to acknowledge. Once you acknowledge the fact that Hashem is and runs, it exists and runs the world and gives you that favor and does for you that kindness, then you give thanks and then you can say Hallel and you can give praise. Okay. There's an interesting point that's made here about this line when it says Vidliku Neiros Bachatzris Kochecha, and they lit the candles in the court, in your holy courtyards. Okay. Where was the menorah lit? In the Beis HaMikdash.
Inside.
Why are we talking about courtyards? Why are they lighting in the courtyard? You don't light the menorah in the courtyard. The courtyard is inside. The menorah is supposed to be inside.
Everyone could see, I presume.
But that's, you would never do that. But you never do that by the menorah.
Inside wasn't ready yet.
The answer is, the inside wasn't ready. The inside wasn't ready. By the time it was time to light the menorah, the inside wasn't ready. So the Chassam Sefer says that with this we can answer the most famous question about Hanukkah. Right? Remember, Geller used to always talk about used to give a different answer every day, Hanukkah. Why is Hanukkah 8 days? It should be 7 days because they had enough oil for one night. So the first night wasn't a miracle. It was the other 7 nights were a miracle. So why do we have 8 nights of Hanukkah? You ever heard that question? Yes, you have.
More Hanukkah.
Of course you have. That's the most famous question of Hanukkah. How are you if the Gemara says that Hanukkah is because they had enough oil for one night and a bird for 8 nights? Okay, that means for one night they had enough. So the first night wasn't a miracle. So why are you having 8 nights? So there's many, many answers that are given. The Chassam Sefer says an answer like this. If they had to light the menorah in the courtyard outside, right? When you light something outside, right, there is going to be some kind of a wind, right, that's going to blow. And it's actually going to cause the burning of the fuel to go faster. So really, even on the first night, even if it was enough oil for one night, it shouldn't have burned the whole night. Because being that it was lit outside, the consumption of the oil should have been burned quicker than usual, and it shouldn't have lasted the whole night, and it still did. So therefore, the first night was also a miracle.
Did it burn? Did they relight it, pour the oil light?
So you have to, that all depends on all the different answers that you give